Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Doom Eternal, which is a first-person shooter developed by id Software and published by Bethesda Softworks for contemporary systems in 2020.
Yeah. And this episode was executive produced by Andrew. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew, for bringing us back into this ever-expanding and dumber world.
It is a dumber world. It is nice to be reminded of the constant that Doom slaps. In terms of gaming.
Yes.
Like in the world of video games, Doom's good.
Doom's good. You can always bet on Doom.
Yeah, but there's not a bad Doom.
Nope.
You know, even people say Doom 3's bad. They're wrong. There's not a bad Doom. Doom's great.
Yeah.
I have some nitpicks with this, and I came at this at a time that was not ideal. You know, for it, I kind of played this like at an ideal time and then split it and then at the anti-ideal time, you know, but in terms of, it's just like, oh yeah, no, this rip and tear.
Yeah.
Sign rip and up. Tear. Yeah. I wouldn't mind ripping and tearing.
You know, just getting those, you know, I've got nitpicks about this that are pretty fundamental, like systemic. I think that this is gilding the lily a little bit too much, and do not think that this is as strong as Doom 2016, but it's still good.
I'm in a similar spot, and it's going to be really interesting to hear feedback on this, because the people who like this game more are like, oh, I could never go back to 2016. And the way that I think about it, like, there's a lot of, we'll get into it. This can be an interesting episode because I think it's going to be pretty generalities heavy in the actual body of the episode, which you get if you are a patron. This is a premium episode, so the generalities is going to be pretty beefy. Everyone gets that. If you want to get the whole thing, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. The actual body of the episode is going to be like, you doom across the map. This new enemy is introduced. Here is some of the dumbest lore you've ever thought of in your life.
Yeah.
It's going to go pretty quick. But generally, this game is incredibly interesting, I think, both in terms of just kind of as a game, what it says about like preference versus kind of strength. You know, like, I'm in this weird position where I think I prefer Doom 2016. I think this is probably a better video game in a lot of ways, but I don't like it as much.
Yeah.
And that's a, you know, even though I like it quite a bit. And that's a weird thing to say. And there's lots of reasons for that, but they're really subjective.
Yeah.
For this. It's gonna be fun to talk about.
A lot of it's going to come down to, do you prefer a simpler machine or not? I think
a simpler machine, and what gets you into a ripping and tearing groove, you know, like a rip, leave a rip, take a tear, bin, you know, at the convenience store, like how, what level you like to rip and tear at. This is a game that probably, for the first time in a long time, probably the game that demands the most attention from you that we've done in forever.
This is
a character action game, but as a shooter. In terms of requiring 100% engagement when it's on. That is a thing that your mileage will spend differently on.
Yes.
It's neat. It's gonna be fun to talk about. I've been looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah. So this is a direct sequel to Doom 2016, picks up 14 years after the events of that, you know, where you're woken up at a UAC base on Mars and then you go to hell. Well, hell has conquered most of Earth. We're kind of in Doom 2 territory here. And obviously you as the Doom Slayer, with your space mountain fortress.
You have a fortress of Doom. You have, this starts with like an interquel that didn't exist, which I kind of love.
Yeah.
Like it starts with you killing the first of the three bosses.
Yeah.
Basically like right in the beginning of this.
Right at the end of the tutorial.
As late as possible. as it could. A lot of things have happened.
Yeah.
It feels like you have a meteor major now. it's weird. You have to go and kill the Hell Priest.
Right.
Mechanically, what this does is it takes that core Doom 2016, which had this propulsive, always be moving, always be pushing forward combat, and takes that and pushes it even further.
Yeah.
The idea in the combat in these games, it is basically you're in an arena where you always have to be moving, and you kill enemies to get your resources back. You cannot be passive. You cannot hang back. If you need something, you have to take it. You're not going to get it in the environment. This takes this even further by expanding it. Returning is the glory kill system, which was the big innovation of Doom 2016. If an enemy was hurt enough, they would start to stagger and blink, and you'd use a melee attack to do this great cinematic where you vangoriously devour them and they drop health.
Yeah. Here you have a Doom blade, which does nothing except give the animators more stuff to work with when taking these things apart.
Yes. And they're a joy to watch, and they never get old.
Well, you'll accidentally like, oh, I never attacked this enemy from above before. And then suddenly I am dismantling this thing in a completely different way.
Seeing all the glory kills is an absolute joy of this game. However, what this does is it pushes, you know, that was the primary resource gathering thing in Doom 2016 was getting health back through aggression. Mm-hmm. Now you get everything back through aggression. So instead of the chainsaw being a one hit kill, oh shit button, it now uses fuel to kill enemies instantly and make ammo drop.
Yeah.
That it used to do that before, but there's less ammo in the environment and the chainsaw automatically refuels to its minimum level. So you can always use it on fodder enemies. You can always use it on low level enemies, which are ammo bags. If you need ammo, you also need to be aggressive.
Yeah. And low level enemies are always going to be present in an arena. They will always be like a small level threat to you, but primarily they are there for you to get stuff from if you end up needing it. Yes, they're pinatas. And, you know, aesthetically, like literally pinatas, you kill them and then a bunch of glowing multicolored objects just spout out.
It's very video gamey. And this is on top of, you know, the other resource here, which is more important than it was in Doom 2016, is armor. And you also get a thing, a flame belch thing. This is one of the games we've done that uses every button on the controller. This is a complicated control scheme where you spit fire. If an enemy is on fire, it will pop off armor. So you can always get armor, health, and ammo whenever you need it. You can always get that, which makes it seem like it's going to be very easy. You have to take it though. You have to be out in the shit. The pushing of that idea.
You got to be looking for your next next prey. And you notice that the chainsaw, you know, it does have that cooldown on it. You know, you can find fuel that will take you up to 3 pips, and 3 pips will take down heavy enemies. But if you use your last one, that will slowly recharge. Flame belch, that's on a cooldown as well. And a lot of stuff is based on cooldowns here. You are keeping track of a lot of things, and mastery of this is kind of entails never forgetting that any of these is at your disposal. And when I start saying like, hey, this is a more intricate machine, or this is a little bit gilding the lily, there's so much to keep track of in this game.
That's when I talk about the attention economy with this game, and this is where I mean it is a preference thing, right? Because to me, this allows for a higher degree of mastery. The people who love this over Doom 2016, who can't go back because Doom 2016 is too simple, I get it, because it is an order of magnitude more simple. The number of things on the screen you have to be aware of, like in this game, is really intense. All of your cooldowns, all of your directional threats, mm-hmm. all of your ammo counts at yeah. all times and all of your meters.
Yeah.
You know, and this is coupled with a couple of things. You know, the final kind of meter little bit that you have two other meters you have to keep track of. Your blood punch, which is what you have instead of a regular punch. It's yeah. a doomified punch
yeah.
that you have. This gets recharged by doing glory kills.
Mm-hmm.
This will break armor and kill basic enemies and shockwave and stagger bigger enemies.
Yeah.
And then a launcher, which will shoot two different kinds of grenades.
Yeah.
Either frag grenades or ice bombs, which will freeze enemies and make them take more damage.
Right.
So you have all of these different meters you're relying on, and you have the ability to refill them all. The way they balance this to keep you constantly spinning plates is by keeping all of your counts on these things very low.
Mm-hmm.
Your ammo counts on everything are very low, and you do yep. not find ammo in the wild.
No.
So you have to, like, you will run out of ammo, which means you have to be chainsawing enemies to get more mm-hmm. ammo. To chainsaw enemies to get more ammo, you need to be, you know, living long enough to recharge that means, which means you need to be glory killing mm-hmm. and getting armor. Like, you are constantly, it's almost like playing an action version of Reigns.
Like a little bit,
are,
yeah.
You are maintaining these different meters in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it only kind of faded to be natural.
Yeah.
You know, like, as opposed to Doom 2016, where I eventually just got into a loop where I was the Doom guy
mm-hmm.
and was just riding a wave, like, ripping and tearing.
Yeah.
In this one, I was always a little too aware of everything and would, like, something would not work and it would disrupt my flow.
Yeah,
because I had ceased to look at that section of the screen to see whether I had blood punch charged mm-hmm. up.
Yeah,
you're not making slow decisions of like, okay, need this, so I should do this. You have to be doing these things at character action speeds.
Yes,
in the game,
and because you know this is a game that is broken up into discrete units by arenas, right?
Yes.
Arenas have particular you know enemies come in waves, and those waves are composed of different enemies. Each enemy, this is a little bit later in the notes, but it's worth bringing up now. Each enemy has its own weak points.
Yes.
And every weapon that you have and every mod that you use on that is a key to one of those weak points. So like a lot of the situational awareness and even just like, you know, keeping an eye on your meters and keeping those plates spinning is there's a little bit of order of operations optimization that you are doing here, knowing that like, okay, I need to survive until the chainsaw is back up and all that I have is the shotgun here. So I need to like find and kill the things or stagger the things that can be, you know, that are best done with sticky grenades using that yes. particular mod. Right. And, you know, this kind of has to become a logic that is just kind of baked in, that just kind of lives in your hands. I never quite reached that point. Just because of the speed at which it ups the complexity and ups the amount of shit that it's throwing at you, but it was there and it felt attainable.
It's worth at this point noting, in case anybody wants to dismiss my opinion, that I'm not good at this game.
Mm-hmm.
I played on normal for most of the game, eventually started dying enough to turn it down.
Same,
and I'm recovering from oral surgery, so I mm-hmm. don't feel too bad about that. And it's still plenty hard. But I did get through most of the game on normal. I could mm-hmm. have stubbornly made it through there. I just needed to record, right?
Yeah.
But I ended up having a pretty similar experience to that. Never quite getting there. With mm-hmm. that, it's not only are there more weapons, every weapon is three weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just keeping track of a lot of things. You're swapping weapon mods, in addition to swapping weapons, you're swapping grenade types during things. It's keeping track of so much that ends up making this game like a really interesting modal game where your attention is either 100% on or 100% mm-hmm. off and no points in between.
I almost want to see somebody like try and do this like in a game jam or something like that, but take the amount of things that you need to keep track of in this and bake that down into a or boil that down into a turn-based strategy game and see if that is satisfying, because you are keeping track of a bunch of stuff.
I was thinking about it as almost like you have a co-pilot, like somebody who manages all these systems for you, and you know it's turn-based or it's slowed down, and just somebody is keeping an eye on all your meters and let you know like grenade is go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that almost. It's fascascinating shit.
Yeah.
So there are all these weapon modems. There's these weak points, which you mentioned, which you want to use. You don't have to use them. It's just a really good idea to.
Yeah.
So it's not quite like you just have the world's biggest key ring and a huge set of random padlocks, you can brute force your way through any lock in the game, just about. It's not quite that prescriptive.
No.
But it is less... it's more prescriptive than the previous game was, where you would find a weapon you really liked and then get really into mastering that. This game wants you to master every weapon. The ammo counts are so low that you won't always have every weapon, so sometimes you do have to improvise. But like, the game is designed around, like, when I talk about this being a better designed game, it is the goal of like, hey, we didn't want that we didn't like that people relied on one weapon in Doom 2016, and we wanted to keep people on that razor's edge for more of the time. And if that's the goal, like, if you're judging this based on whether it succeeded in that, it succeeded in it as well as I think anything could. It is 100% success in achieving that goal, you know, which makes it a little bit hard to talk about, because that goal is not necessarily what I'm looking for in a Doom.
I'm happy that we are both living in kind of that same tension here, because I can admire the goal, and I can even admire like the ways that they did it by making things more video gamey. You know, this, you know, 2016, it did feel like a more arcadey, you know, aesthetically, it felt like a more arcadey Doom 3, right?
Yes.
This is moving towards being, you know, like almost as visually, almost as arcadey as like a Dreamcast game.
It's got that going on. Yeah. With the character action rhythms, except it's more readable to me than character action, because of everything feels weighty and impactful, which we'll talk about. And it's also, I don't know, you know, not with no comparison, I don't know exactly where you land on this. I really liked this game. It's going to sound like I'm damning it by comparing it to 2016, but I loved 2016.
Yeah.
This game I really liked. Like, this is really, really good. It just got frustrating at a point, and it also got fatiguing. It's a weird thing to say, because I'm captain. I don't want to be passive in my games. Like, I like being active. There's something about the degree, 100% attention being paid with this frequency that had a deleterious effect.
Yeah. I need the biggest seed bell you have. No, that's too big.
Exactly. This is a huge fucking seed bell. And you have to... It's worth noting that the stuff, you know, the difficulty, the game is non-condescending about difficulty, which I love. You can lower the difficulty at any time. After you die enough times, it will give you a bonus. Like, hey, do you just want to get through this part? Love that. But even on easy difficulty, this game is hard. It is much harder than Doom 2016.
I bumped down to I'm too young to die or whatever, probably about three quarters of the way through it, something like
similar. I know that it's when Marauders started showing up as part of regular encounters. There's an exact point. I was just like, oh, this is a boss. You can't just keep throwing this guy at me. I have to fight this guy one-on-one. This is a one-on-one monster. I don't fight this guy with other stuff. Are you nuts? And then that was the moment. It's down to the second. When I was like, you know, and I gave it a good kind of honest try. If I had spent more time with it, I would have got it. You know, it's not unattainable. I just wasn't in the mind space for it.
They made more room in your mouth.
I had teeth taken out and replaced with horrible little holes that attract bits of food. So I had the constant sense of bits of food being inside my body.
And not the right way.
Absolutely the wrong way. It's bad. Don't get your wisdom teeth taken out, no matter what an oral surgeon says. I'm a cautionary tale. I regret it. I know they were ticking time bombs. I should have just let it ride. Roll the dice, baby. I don't know. Maybe I'll die from natural causes before they go bad. This sucks. I don't like this.
So I did have to bump down the difficulty probably around that same time, but it still felt, you know, really, really hard, because, you know, I don't know exactly what the difficulty thing changed. I felt more durable. I feel like it was more of a damage thing.
They're a little less aggressive. You get the same number of demons. It's worth actually like camping out just for a second on how good the difficulty options are considered in this, because they don't, when we say non-condescending, I don't just mean put on the chicken hat and go in the corner like we're making a joke of you because you don't have a big gamer penis. Like it's not just doing that. It's also saying we want to give you basically the same experience. It's not the same experience. It's less hard, but they're not going to dumb it down so much that it feels ludicrous. Like, you know how every once in a while you'll play a video game where the easy mode is you may as well not play it, and then the normal mode is too hard. Like there's a bad adjustment between them.
Yeah.
They did a really good job of making the easy mode in this actually carry across the core of the gameplay.
Yeah.
You still feel like a badass and you're still living on that razor's edge. You know, they want you to be at zero armor and around 50 health at max for most of these encounters. And you will be if you are playing at the difficulty level that's right for you.
Even at casual in the late game, I was still running out of ammo, right? Like I still had to engage with all of the systems because it had me at that level, almost like Resident Evil 4 level of privation.
Yeah, it's really smart. Like I'm so impressed by how this game is put together. It is really, really tightly designed.
Yeah.
In that way.
I want to know how you feel about the empowered demon system, kind of the gravelording that happens here.
Yeah. Where like a demon will pop up every once in a while. This is a demon. They got to kill another player. They'll kind of come into your world here. Again, you know, when you said earlier, kind of gilding the lily, there's an element of this where it was hard enough before this happened for me.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting idea.
Yes.
It wasn't the thing that ultimately the my biggest point of contention with this is introducing boss monsters while you're just doing general Doom stuff. That is my biggest issue with this is having every boss monster roll into regular encounters basically quickly.
Yeah.
That is my biggest bummer. These did not turn out to be too big of a deal for me in terms of my, you know, mental health and difficulty well-being, I guess. You know, I didn't have any time with my family, you know, from the empowered demons didn't get me.
Oh gosh. You can mitigate difficulty by getting one-ups in this. Yep. There's a life system, which is pretty cool. These are rewards often for exploration, for finding secrets, in addition to the stuff that you find for the fucking ludicrous upgrade systems that you have in this.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. The number of the absolute number of currencies in this. It's got a free to play number of currencies. Like it almost feels like a crystal crush saga or something.
Yeah. No,
where you're getting gems and vampire points. And
yeah, we got Genshin impacted. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's all single player. Like there's so many different ways it's nice that all of the collectibles are not just aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, you're still going to find the little Doom toys, but you're also going to find one ups, which are meaningful. The way these work is the checkpointing in this game is actually pretty generous.
No.
There'll always be a checkpoint before a combat encounter. But if you lose a life, you'll just respawn right there. There is a mode you can turn on that is orthogonal to your regular difficulty mode, which actually has you have limited lives in general, like an old school game. Could not pay me to do that.
Nope.
Just not interested in that because I died a lot.
Yeah.
In this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you already mentioned the Sentinel armor thing. The only time I had to rely on this was the last boss, which even on casual was just too much of a damage sponge. Good Lord.
It takes a lot of hits. Yeah. The last boss has a weird gimmick that's trying to communicate that I think it communicates badly.
Yeah.
We'll get into that, even though the spectacle really can't be beat. But yeah, it'll give you a leg up. You know, hey, have some really good armor. And again, the language around it is very appreciated. It's not condescending.
Yeah.
It's like, you probably want to see more of the game, right?
Yeah. This isn't going to impede your progress. Like,
yeah, don't be a dick. I love it so much. I wish I could just instill that in devs. I know there are people who love that. Like, you know, somebody call me an asshole for switching to easy.
Yeah,
like,
the really Ninja Gaiden dog collar thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be shamed. And it's so weird. Like, get your fetish off of Front Street. You know, like, hey, let her out. If you want to be kept in a dog cage, don't be so public about it.
Please and thank you.
Yeah,
I don't mind if you do.
Here.
Yeah.
But no, whatever you want to do in the privacy of your own home, but just,
you know. I'll defend you. I'll defend to the death your right to be put in that dog cage. It's fine.
Yeah. I just don't need to hear about it. Yeah. There's a very complicated upgrade system in this. There are a lot of things to go over. If you complete encounters, you earn weapon points. These are going to unlock perks for weapon mods, which are another unlockable that you get.
Yes.
So the weapon mods you pick, you pick between two of them at first, then you can switch. Then you can get these weapon points to upgrade those. And then the last point is always a mastery challenge, which is like an achievement thing.
Yeah.
Kill a certain number of enemies in a particular way using that mod. One of my favorite things is they hide a rare pickup, these mastery points that let you skip that.
Yeah.
Every game should do that. If you have the like get 5 flying grenade kills nonsense in your game, just having a thing you can find that's like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, cause I understand people like those, like there's a mindset that likes those because they encourage people to try to play in a different way.
Yeah.
With a game like this, I'm having enough fun and engagement trying to play it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be encouraged to try to do stunts.
Yeah.
You know,
it ended up being the case where like the ones of these that I ended up getting, the mastery challenges that ended up satisfying were just for like the mods that I really liked using anyway, and like getting them accidentally.
Yeah.
You know, same. So like I'm always riding the rocket launcher if I can, and yes. You know, getting the like the timed detonation one was as easy as possible because that is always how I was using this thing. Yeah.
Yep. And this, that kind of dovetails into an interesting bit about all of these upgrades. Again, the way this is smartly designed, there are more of them than you could ever use.
Yes.
You can max out everything, mm-hmm. Like twice basically with all the ones you can find because they know you're not going to find all of them. Again, right. Smart and kind design.
Yeah.
The other thing you can get Praetor suit upgrades, these points around the world. These unlock perks related to exploration. Things about the world, so like exploding barrels, your grenade launcher.
Mm-hmm.
You also find sentinel crystals. the noun game in this.
I should have put in like two that were made up just to see if somebody could spot them.
Yeah. These upgrade your cooldown abilities.
Yeah. Yeah. And each of these upgrades.
These do weird triple duty.
God. Yeah. So you can all, this is also how you upgrade your health, your armor, and your ammo capacities.
And secret third things.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible. So each of these you choose will give you the upgrade, it says, but then also upgrade either health, ammo, or armor. Then when you get both sides of one of these little things, you get the middle thing as a bonus perk.
Yeah.
We're not done. We're about halfway through explaining the currencies in this.
Remember what I said about gilding the lily, Gary?
Yeah,
there are a lot
of fucking upgrade systems in
I've
this.
I've got too and, much like, shit in me.
They're all things I want.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't do the thing where you're getting 0.1% frost damage against moving targets.
Right, right.
They're even the things that I usually will scoff at, like 20% reload speed.
Yeah.
Those ended up being pretty useful in this.
Yeah.
You know, I usually don't care for those. It doesn't seem like it'll make a difference. The margins you're moving at in this game, they do make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just a lot of them.
Yeah.
It's pretty bonkers. Then there are runes. These are perks that you get, and you get slots. So these are like ring slots.
Mm-hmm.
These are pretty cool. There's one that I feel that is the marquee one, which is the one you got here in the notes.
Yeah.
If you are doing alternate fire in the air, you'll slow down.
Yeah.
At a game this speed, you are expected to snipe weak spots.
Yes.
And this is the thing that makes that possible.
Absolutely necessary, especially for the next to last boss fight. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then the final thing you get are sentinel batteries, not to be confused with sentinel crystals. These are used on the Doom Fortress on your hub to unlock upgrade materials in different rooms. So upgrade both access to these materials you can find and then cosmetics, like other costumes and stuff.
Yeah, I was pretty pissed off when I saw what looked like cool armor and I used two of these to unlock it. And it was just a classic skin. And I was like, fuck, I could have gotten a weapon mod, you assholes.
Yeah. It's to me, 100%. To me, it's a little balanced by the fact that there are a lot of these
things,
which is counterbalanced by the fact that I'm not going to get them all.
Right.
Even though I do like, so kind of moving into the time when this is off, when we talk about this being 100% on or 100% off,
mm-hmm.
if you're in a combat arena, all of your attention is taken. You cannot look away from the screen.
No.
If you're not, you're doing these platforming bits that Gary, are added.
These suck the stars from the sky.
Oh man. Interesting.
I like hate these. This. Okay. Oh,
yeah. Let's fight. I don't fight. You'll win. Right now I'm recovering from major surgery. I ended up kind of liking these. I was really surprised. I'll make my case and you can talk about why they suck. One, I needed time off from being on.
Mm-hmm.
I needed time where I was not in danger to survive this. Two, the consequences for failure are almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take a little bit of damage, but you no longer die if you fall in a pit. You just start over with like a little bit of health. So it, you know, they're just kind of these little things. And three, and this is purely subjective, I don't think I've ever felt platforming that feels this heavy.
Okay.
You are the Metalloid Maniac in this when you climb on stuff, or like Charlie Brown climbing up the fence like a spider. And you feel so heavy in this. And like heavy platforming is something I didn't know I wanted.
Okay.
And on top of like how the combat feels and stuff, one of the things that makes me like this more than I like a character action game, I was thinking about how this has that demanding too much of my attention, but I have more fun with this than I do a Devil May Cry. It's because everything feels heavy and impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the action feels meaningful, including the platforming. Mm-hmm. Like landing on something or landing on a wall feels huge and heavy and powerful.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like I just in terms of feeling embodied by the character, I don't feel like a paper doll of Dante or a paper doll of Bayonetta floating next to something and mm-hmm. watching numbers come up without actually hitting it. Yeah. Everything hits when I land on something, when I'm platforming, if I swing on a monkey bar, mm-hmm. I'm hitting it. It feels like poof, big.
Yeah.
It just is a real triumph of game feel for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I again welcome the breaks. Like I'm gonna go explore for a little bit because my jaw is so tense from that combat encounter. You know, there's a goddamn armored mancubus they threw at the end of that, and it almost fucked me up. Let's go do this for a little bit.
Yeah. I will give you all of those points. Like those are things that are that are in their favor. I think the level design in this is actually really good. Generally, like finding secrets is fun. The points where I really, really dislike these is when it becomes almost like an Uncharted puzzle where, okay, I have jumped to this thing. Now I have to scan the entire environment to see the one patch of thing that I can, you know, climb onto. There were a lot of points where I just kind of felt like it was not providing me with an interesting challenge. It was more just like, I don't know, Where's Waldo or Spot the Difference?
Yeah.
To like get where it was. It felt like there were probably better ways to use that platforming than to just have, you know, 20% of every level be Doom Guy dangling from the bottom of something that's floating in the sky and scanning for the one patch that he can dash to. All of the platforming stuff that is thrown into the arenas, like the little trapeze bars, and especially the launch pads, like the air dashes, like that brings a very welcome aspect of like Quake 3 Arena to this to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a game I fucking love.
Yeah.
But like when it is let's Uncharted for a little while, and I'm just using Uncharted because it's the best the best example. It does is bring to mind that one person who posted the GIF showing Lara Croft climbing up a wall and then moving slightly to the right and then climbing up more, and then just an Atari, you know, pixel block moving up a lane and then moving right and then moving up the lane there.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt like that. It didn't feel like game to me.
I mean, you're not wrong about that. Like it was not because the other parts were so intensity focused and attention focused.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this was basically autopilot Uncharted bullshit. Like I don't like that in Uncharted.
Yeah.
I don't like those bits in, you know, the climbing path are the worst parts of modern games. I think like we did Horizon Zero Dawn and it's just, what am I doing? I may as well be mm-hmm. watching a cutscene. In this, I liked it because it contrasted with the other bit.
Yeah.
You know, it just was a balm. And the other contrasts they use are like some of the most embarrassing cutscenes and lore stuff that like could exist.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I didn't want it just to be a cutscene in that. In this one, I was just enjoying the aesthetics, like in the kinesthetics and aesthetics and just kind of a mm-hmm. you know, keys jangling in my face way. You know, I needed a busy board for a second because I needed a great...
Yeah, you know? I'm thinking, you know, part of why I rejected this as well is like I'm here for that tension. It's not like it needs to be entirely like mono-paced, you know, balls to the wall and then credits. Like that's not what I'm asking for. It just kind of felt like they were forcing me to play a game that I didn't sign up for in the middle of it.
It is 100% that.
Yeah.
It just, I needed to do something else. If I didn't do that, if it was just arena after arena, mm-hmm. I would have to get up and scroll my phone. Instead of doing those platforming, and at least at the very, you know, this did tie in and that I was finding power-ups and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, like take out the points where you're dangling over a void and you'd make the spaces a little bit more intricate. And you know, if you're using switches and stuff, maybe like, I don't remember the navigation and stuff in Doom 2016 being as just pace killing to me. You're just dead in the water, no wind in your sails kind of thing is what it felt like.
I think we agree with the effect it's having. It's just an effect that I wanted.
In this
from time to time, and I was really won over by the feeling of it.
The feeling is good.
It's literally Metalloid Maniac. Like, if you've seen that, I Think You Should Leave season 3 sketch, that is how it works. When you're crawling up stuff, you're just crawling over that like it's your floor, like you built it. And I've never seen anything more Metalloid Maniac than that. It's not very Doom Guy. I don't know why the Doom Guy can do that. It's weird. Yeah. Nobody can do that. It's very bizarre. There's also some signaling issues. Like, there are parts where it does feel like Where's Waldoing. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of things where it's unclear where you're supposed to go next that feel kind of bad. That is definitely a thing.
And there are also points where it kind of turns a little bit into first person Celeste. You know, complete with power-ups midair that will recharge your dashes and your double jump.
Again, I kind of liked that. The feeling of it being different. Like, I don't like Celeste that much, but I liked that in this. Mm-hmm. I think it was just the contrast. I would agree that it doesn't fit very well, but it worked for me. Mm-hmm. But I was just desperate for a break. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just like, fuck, man, that was intense. Mm-hmm. Let's go look for whatever that question mark is.
Yeah.
They do a thing where this is stage based, not open world, but at the end of every level, they give you fast travel. So you can jump to different parts of it to look for secrets before you finish the stage, in case you want to go find those. They also do a thing where one of the secrets you find are cheats, and you can use those cheats without penalty if you're replaying a level.
Yeah.
So you just want to see the end of a level. Then once you get there, if you want to have unlimited health while you look for all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Go nuts. The game is very progressive, again, and kind of kind in terms of how it designs that stuff.
Yes.
Which I think is the way that game designers should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I prefer that attitude.
Agreed. And some of the secrets you can find are like special encounters, which are like challenges where you're, you know, often in like a little side area, and you've got to, you know, just kill a certain number of enemies within a certain amount of time. And those are optional, and you get rewards off of the back of doing those. I didn't do a lot of those after the first few levels because I was not eyes on the prize, but like, I knew I had to beat the game. I felt like I got it, but
yeah. It's for, the core loop, which is really fun. Depending on how much you want to engage with that, it's more of that for you. The same thing on the Doom, Fortress. There's a practice room.
Yeah.
You know, where you can just, without losing ammo, you can just engage in some Doom, you know, almost like a chalice dungeon of Doom, you know, to practice weapons. You know, it's like that. There's more if you want it.
Yeah.
There are multiplayer modes out of this, which I have not fucked with. There's a 2v1 mode that has one Slayer fighting against two player controlled demons, where they get demon movesets and then can also spawn and empower other demons.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
That sounds rad. There's one segment in the game where you get to do that, and I wish that there were more.
It's a really cool segment.
Yeah.
And then there's a Horde mode that's added to that. This is one of the first Doom modes without any kind of, like, the last one had this, like, snap map kind of thing where you can make your own levels. This is not, there's not a level editor, which is a big sea change for Doom.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So talking aesthetics, we already talked about how this is a more colorful game than Doom 2016. You get those multicolored drops. You also get goofier looking demons that have been more modeled after the original versions, you know, the classic designs.
I cannot state how much I love this.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it's a good decision.
The way that this is colorful and the way that this looks, I think is absolutely striking and awesome. Mm-hmm. There are so many vistas in this.
Yeah.
That just do things with scale.
Yeah.
You know, like, this has, so I'm not a mecha liker. This taking place in the after effects of the demon mecha war, just being around a bunch of dead mecha on the ground that died fighting demons.
Uh-huh.
It's the first time a giant mecha has looked cool to me in my life. I'm 43. It hasn't happened up until this point. I was just like, power armor or smaller. Thank you. It looked cool. The demon just walking in the background, like, it looks like hell on earth.
Yeah.
You know, you are in, as opposed to Doom 2016 and Doom 3, where you're on kind of anonymous space bases, you spend time on Earth, like in department stores.
Yeah.
And with recognizable geometry. And then also in like weird fantasy castles and shit.
Mm-hmm.
The variety of environments and how they look and how the demons look, all that stuff is a big upgrade to me.
Yeah.
I love how this game looks.
Same. I'm not here to be scared, you know, like
no.
Doom 3 is a survival horror game, but like, I don't know, there's tension to be found in the original Dooms. And maybe if you played it back in the day, it was like, oh, that's too spooky for me or whatever. But like, I need this to be over the top, not grimdark.
Yeah. I mean, I like both, yeah. You know, but this is also good. This is a great flavor yeah. of this. And there's an element of it that's not grimdark, but just like absolute maximal Warhammer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
style, just, you know, that it reminds me a lot of, you know, a 14-year-old's notebook. Like it reminds mm-hmm. me a lot of the pitch document for Doom, you know, mm-hmm. the Hell Priest and the Scions of Archon, you know, the Sentinels of Archon, the Scion Lords, of, like all of that shit has like a 14-year-old appeal.
Yeah.
That I absolutely love, to it until they start putting words about it. yeah. But in terms of how it looks, it's perfect.
Yeah. The soundtrack feels different to me. It incorporates what feels like more synthetic sounds, more electronic melodies. I mm-hmm. feel like this is a bit of a step backward from the Doom 2016 yeah. soundtrack. That is going to be a matter of taste, though.
Yeah. I don't think it's objectively weaker. It's also still a joy. Yeah. You know, I didn't notice it being bad or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing I did notice that I didn't like. Is this emphasis on lore and story.
Mm-hmm.
It's real weird. So Doom 2016 was famous and lauded for being a story, having antagonism towards the yeah. story. You know, the infamous bit, like somebody starts dropping a lore bomb on you and the Doom guy kills him and skips mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, you know, just
mirroring the player.
Yeah, like something plays an audio log to you and he just punches the screen or smashes it. Yeah,
fuck this shit. Yeah. Doom Eternal decided to go the absolute opposite direction.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. there's like a joy to some of the word salad of the Archons, of the Sentinels, of the, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, of the Night Stalkers.
If you want to see paragraphs made of Teflon, open the Codex.
The Codex is incredible for how boring it is. and there are people who take this seriously. Like we mm-hmm. did Aria of Sorrow this month. I've learned that people take any lore yeah. seriously. There are people who, if there's lore, all lore is good lore for some
there
folk.
Are words. If there are words, they matter.
They exactly. There are people who have that, so I get it. For me, this was such a weird, like I never liked it, but I was always so constantly perplexed by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like a clown holding a gun. You know, like I didn't feel threatened because I was surprised by it
uh-huh.
every time. You know, I wanted to hate it. It didn't really work for me. I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it has respect for Doom lore that came before.
Mm-hmm.
This ties in. This confirms a lot of things. It makes the Doom comic book canonical. It makes mm-hmm. the Doom 3 and Doom 64 canonical. It implies that every Doom WoD is canonical.
Yeah, which is fucking wild.
Including the one where you play as Sailor Moon, uh-huh. and instead of a chainsaw, you hold out Luna, and Luna scratches the bad guys. all of this canonical.
My house.wad, canonical, baby.
It's all canonical. I respect that kind of meta bullshit.
Uh-huh.
It's just taken so seriously.
Yeah,
in this.
If there was anything to marry the emphasis on lore here to the complete disinterest in lore in the previous one, like there was a codex in the previous one that was there, but like you were not forced to watch like the Doom guy, you know, watch somebody try to make a deal with
the
Doom
hell's
guy.
The betrayer? Yeah, who's like
the, yeah,
who's the betrayer?
Yeah.
And like why is this guy, you know, what is the Doom guy, his gladiatorial yeah. origins
I will give you what you have lost, like yeah. what have I
they
what
are
have
no
I
longer
lost?
Your people
yeah
what are you talking about? Like it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I the amount of out to seeness that I was feeling in this, and how like the game cares and doesn't care
uh-huh.
at the same time, like it knows it needs something to take a break from all the ripping and tearing. But it's impossible to keep any of that shit in mind when you're just fighting what is essentially like a fast moving combat spreadsheet
yeah.
of meters and weak points and positioning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you are in a deeply numerical kind of field, a non-literal field. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to separate out one an arachnotron from another. They're not characters. There's no lore to them. Hey, they're just a collection of hit points and a weak point.
Hey, you Gary, know? You know, this is the analog that I'm going to give you. It feels like if you went from playing Mortal Kombat 1 to, or, you know, the original Mortal Kombat to playing Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just it feels like they skipped so many steps in between, and it was just, okay, here's one, and then boom, maximally
now the Joker's so many here steps and he's got a tragic backstory.
Yeah.
Now you're learning about the Joker's bad day in Mortal Kombat, and like, yeah. Why it's fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
There are parts of this that are kind of fun. The one bit that I like is when you interact with humans.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all fucking terrified of you.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
I find that scene really pleasurable. And some of the designs are pleasurable, but it's, I don't know. I will be curious to hear, and I say this in a non-confrontational way. I don't want this to be challenging. If anyone writes in, they're like, no, this lore is actually super good. And I'm not saying that because I want to like study them as a specimen. I'm curious as to what is good about it, because to me, it felt so superfluous as a thing. Like, it was hard for me to pay attention to, or to know I needed to pay attention to it, or to even conceive of that.
I'm saying it because I do want to study you as a specimen. Get in the fucking jar.
Yeah. I'm more that I find the Aria of Sorrow story people more of a specimen. In general, you're getting jarred though.
Yeah.
We will study you.
Yeah. You're going to go in the jar, dog.
Eat the pennies.
Yeah.
There are some attempts at comedy in this, some dark comedy, with the UAC trying to integrate the demons into this blasted hell space, calling them mortally challenged instead of demons, because this creates our, adds demons add our diversity. This stuff is bad. It's, you know, bordering on the edge of being, adjacent to making fun of political correctness in a shitty like Steven Crowder way. But more than that, it's just not funny.
Yeah, that's the thing. They could get away with having, you know, a wrong view of this if it was like if it landed with any punch or any bite.
It's the most obvious joke
you
could make here. It's beneath them.
So biographics on this, this was announced at E3 in 2018, and kind of the team's original goal for this was to broaden the Doom universe, which they did, and also kind of marry this a little bit more with the classics in the entry, or with the classic entries in the series, while addressing some problems that they saw with, you know, the gameplay loop of 2016.
Yes. They wanted to add an invasion mode to this where players would invade your game, controlling demons, you know, Dark Souls-esque. They ended up scrapping that. That's where the empowered demons kind of come from. You know, it's a version of that. Delays kind of made this game out March 20th, 2020, during the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, at the same time as Animal Crossing New Horizon, which led to a lot of fun fan art with Doomguy and Isabel. All that stuff is cute.
Yes, very cute. Yeah. And post-release, one of the things that was most, I don't know, notable about this, but something that became like the story of the game, was drama around the official soundtrack release, the one that came with the special edition version of the game. People noticed that it sounded different, and that was because the final mixes were not done by the composer of this game, Mick Gordon. And there is an awful lot of he said, he said, she said kind of about this a little bit, about Mick Gordon not making deadlines or stuff being usurped. This became one of those things where people were sharing JPEGs of text, you know,
like, yes,
it was bad.
This felt like this is such a frustrating thing to read about because I understand people are very mad about it. And it just felt hard to. Like, and this could be the mindset I was going into with this. I don't want to be a class traitor. I had a hard time caring about this.
Yeah.
What it sounded like from the best I could tell was that there were business deadlines with the publisher for the special edition that were not communicated well to Mick.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, Mick could not make those. So they ended up bringing somebody else in to do the remixes.
Yeah.
This made Mick really mad. Mick also did not get, what he was contractually obligated to get, which obviously sucks. I'm not saying that's okay.
Yeah, that sucks.
Pay the amount you agreed to pay. But at the same time, I can imagine it being a thing where Mick is talking to id and id is talking to Bethesda.
Yeah.
And, you know, there just being a lot of masters mm-hmm. for this. And the way it's talked about is like a personal betrayal.
Yeah.
Which made me feel like the people involved seemed a little bit like children.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I'm not saying you just shrug it off. Like, it's just, you shrug off bad business practices as just being business.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this is a big comp. Like, this isn't a cottage, you know, this isn't a band choosing not to open for you after they agreed to at your hometown. Yeah. Like, this is like, you know, a gigantic, huge project, and it fucking sucks, but that's capitalism. Like, sometimes there are weird deadlines and contracts that interfere with other contracts.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like people were being babies about this a little bit to me.
The fact that a lot of it was aired in the open as well. I don't know how Gordon gets recourse for that. Aside from telling people like, hey, this is my version of what happened. But I don't know. It just
public relation revenge.
Yeah.
Like he went to Reddit just to be like, these people are shits. I'm never going to work with them again.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to minimize that feeling. And I don't, no one should just deal with being mistreated. Right. Mm-hmm. It just, the whole thing came off as a pretty bad look to me, and a weird, like, there are real hard lines drawn in the sand in terms of who you side with mm-hmm. in this, in like a fandom community. The whole thing feels like none of my business.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, I don't know. Again, you can chalk it up to this. If this is bad class politics on my part, chalk it up to oral surgery and pain relievers. Mm-hmm. But like, I just couldn't get too invested in this.
Yeah.
Personally.
Mm-hmm. It's also one of those things where I'm not gonna listen to that soundtrack. Like, as much as I appreciate the music in this, the music lives in the dynamic mix, responding to gameplay, you know, kind of thing. And so I would be the wrong person to ask about, you know, the quality, you know, and compression between these. Yeah, yeah. And I say that as somebody who listens to soundtracks, right?
Yeah. It's just I'm not a metal guy. Like, I like metal in this context only.
Yeah.
The one thing I did find out from researching this is that Mick Gordon has a soul patch that's a single vertical line.
Oh no.
That goes directly down the middle of his chin. So I'm not holding that against him. That's not why I find this thing. I just think it's information that's important to the discussion.
I just thought you had to know.
I did one of those little Twitter readers of added additional context.
Community notes.
Community note. He has a soul patch, just a single vertical line that goes from his lip down to the bottom of his chin.
Yeah. Oh my lord.
Yeah, just everyone should know that, in case if you're phoning in on this. So Gordon was not brought back for the DLC campaign. He also refused to work. It is unclear also whether he refused or whether they refused him. That's another he said she said thing. Don't know.
It's a shame that whatever decisions were made led to this becoming the, you know, a little bit of the post-release story. Know, and kind of always being a footnote to the to the actual, you know, game as you play it.
I also want to note to you that I didn't spend tons of time researching that individual bit. If mm-hmm. I'm monstrously wrong in one of my impressions that I got, have a little bit of grace, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm happy to be corrected. Write in. Because mm-hmm. I might be, you know, I might just be wrong about it. Based on what I could see, it felt a little silly.
The post game summaries that I saw brought me to the conclusions that I found.
I didn't live it.
Yeah.
The game got good reviews, but there's a little bit of a split reception among Doom fans. This is either people's favorite Doom or one they feel like is a bit of a misstep, mm-hmm. largely because of changes from Doom 2016 and largely because of the lore stuff. Yeah. There is a two-part DLC campaign to this. Ancient Gods mm-hmm. continues the story, ends with the Doom guy fighting the Lord of Hell, which is also a Doom guy.
So fucking dumb.
It's pretty incredible.
There's so many like red herring, like twists, reveals, blah blah blah. This person is actually this person.
The Sentinel progeny. Yeah. it's all stuff like that. I did not play the DLC. If I were in the mood for this, I'd probably replay 2016 and maybe replay this.
Yeah.
I like this game. I don't have an unlimited appetite for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that is breaking news, because this is usually where we talk about, like, hey, what's the future look like for the series or what came after this? As of when we're recording this in September of 2023, this literally leaked yesterday. But the FTC leaked information accidentally related to the Microsoft and Activision merger, showing a whole bunch of stuff coming up on not just Microsoft and Xbox's plate, but also Bethesda, because Bethesda is owned by Microsoft. And in addition to a bunch of stuff that seems pretty cool, like Dishonored 3 is on the slate, Fallout 3 remake is on the slate, Doom, something called Doom Year Zero is on the schedule. I've got no idea what that is. There is no indication. It's literally just a name. But it's, you know, odds are pretty good that there is at least intention for this to continue.
The Doom, you know, the idea of this game providing the backstory, you know, for what Doom is, what the Doom guy did, a 0-0 makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, as a direction to take it. And I'm cautiously optimistic. Like, that comes out in a few years, I'll be in the mood for this again.
Yeah.
You know, nothing wrong with a little rip and tear.
Nope.
From time to time.
Yeah.
As a thing. So curious about that. And obviously, over the moon for Dishonored 3, assuming that it's, you know, the right devs and stuff, like, be still my heart.
Yeah.
That's going to be it for this portion of the episode. If you're hearing this, thank you for listening. We really appreciate you. If you'd like to hear the full premium episode and all of our other premium episodes, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You get episodes of Unfilmable, you get Bonfireside Chat, you get extra Abduct Sufferings, you get all kinds of stuff for just $5 a month.
Yeah. We like to think that it is a pretty good value. If you have thoughts about September's games, it is too late to write in about those, unfortunately. But if you have thoughts about October's games, you can write in by October the 15th at duckfeed.tv/contact. October being horror month, we are talking about Amnesia the Bunker, Dredge, and Signalis. Signalis being the premium episode for that month.
Yes. Also perhaps have some big announcements. Stay tuned. Just in general, I know you're staying tuned anyway, but continue to stay tuned.
Please do. Do we have a highlighted project for this week?
We don't.
Okay.
Nothing. If you are somebody gave me some helpful feedback and said that the way that I've been saying this makes it sound like I do not want trans mask people. When non-cis, non-male, that's not what I mean. I just didn't have an elegant way. I don't want is someone to be like, I'm not minority enough. Basically, if you're not demographically identical to me or Cole.
Yes.
If you are a minority, and for our purposes, that does include women, and you have a project you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, a link, and we'd be happy to shout it out.
Please do.
Got nothing for this week, but so the line is short. Also, you know, we don't have to, like, there's not a pressure. You know, don't feel like you have to come up with something, but we'd be happy to try to put some eyes on you if we can.
Yeah. With horror month coming up, I want to remind people, because some folks are surprised. I stream horror games, twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. Boah. I've been doing it for fucking 8 years, dude. Yeah. I stream over there, horror games. A few of them are ones that I've streamed before. So that is every Friday and Saturday night.
Yes. Yeah. And then a final thing, we talked about this, the announcement, just in case, put out there, we will not be at PRGE this year. We are looking for other stuff to do. Yep. There are some thumbs and some pies on that, so to speak, trying to figure out some alternatives now. So keep an eye out for that. It does look like if you were going to be at PRGE, it looks like I will be on the Retronauts panel for that. So you will be able to see my form, but without our content.
Those
dastards used an image of me to promote their panels and speakers.
It's so wild.
It's like they don't even know what they're doing. It's just, come on, guys. But I'll be there, and I'll try to have some buttons and stuff in my pocket. If you want anything, or you want to say hi. I think that's about it.
I think so. Thank you so much to Gwen, our producer.
Thank you, Gwen. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah. See you next week.
Bye-bye.